What's going on in the cloud? New decryptors available for your favorite ransomware, and robocalls have finally stopped. All this and more in today's MSP Dispatch. Good morning and welcome to MSP Dispatch for July 5th, 2022. I'm Ray Rossini and I'm joined as always by Mr. Tony Francisco. Tony, how you doing, my brother?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. 4th of July weekend, Independence Day, happy birthday, America. It was good. How was your weekend?
My weekend was great. Literally set my money on fire. Fireworks, of course.
Wait, great most grilling. Important thing, show me all your fingers.
I have all 9 fingers. No, I have all 10 all fingers piggies. And toes. There was a sparkler incident with my little niece. She is fine. It's a rite of passage. It happens. She was very quick to point out her dad did it. She pointed at her dad and said, daddy's fault. So, but besides that, it was a very, very fun and enjoyable, 4th of July. But today's the 5th of July, and we have a lot of news. So what do you say we get into it?
Let's get into the news.
As reported by Joe Panettiere on Channel E2E, using data compiled by Canalys, the big three cloud providers dominate with a total of 62% market share as of Q3 2022, up from 58%. As of Q1 2022, Amazon held 33%, Microsoft held 21%, and Google Cloud with 8%. Worldwide spending on cloud infrastructure reached $55.9 billion in Q1, up 34% compared to the same period last year. The big three grew at a combined 42% in the previous 12 months. Tony, Microsoft has been pushing cloud aggressively, most notably via the new terms of their partner programs. With numbers like this, it's easy to see why. Are MSPs ready to take advantage of this?
Ray, this is an amazing transition that we've all been taking a front row seat, watching happen from the genesis of installing multiple 386s and 486s and the Pentium computers in. And I know there's so many people that just caught their attention and managing these computers and then figuring out how to manage Xeon processors in a data center style environment where you're leasing a rack space. In some cases, this rack spaces were possibly in your garage, but it didn't really matter. Putting it in someone else's garage that was a nicer garage, that had coolant, that had a better ping pipe and what was the 3 P's? Ping pipe and power. Now there's 4 P's from what I understand. that's the way to go. But who could do it in a way that was secure, reliable, and most importantly, easy to manage? These new cloud providers out there are just behemoths in their knowledge base, their history of understanding the computers from every single level from the ground up. And now that they have the ability to automate, make something easier that the MSP community has been doing for so long and working so hard at, this is the natural evolution. What are your thoughts? Do you think that we're seeing the beginning part of this? Do you think there's going to be a pendulum swinging back to the other side? Or do you think that we're almost calcifying the very, very baseline from everything moving forward from today?
I think this is a perfect example of what what we see usually, right? We talked about whether it's the partner programs telling the MSPs what to do. We had this conversation on previous episodes. Or whether the MSPs were guiding the partner programs, right? In the case of the discussion we have with Cloudflare, they reached out to MSPs and asked, "What do you want?" In the case of Microsoft, Microsoft saying, "You're going to do these 7 things. If not, you're not going to be a Microsoft partner." But Microsoft has the data behind it. Google, Amazon, there's the data right there. The money's there. They're telling MSPs, "Take advantage of it. We don't want you to sit there and sell the product. We don't care about you selling the product. We want you to sell the extra money on top of it." Jay McBain of Canalys has reported many times, for every dollar spent on cloud, meaning you're spending that dollar on compute, storage, or whatever else it happens to be, there's an additional $6 of consulting. And Microsoft knows this. And for the MSPs that want to take advantage of this, there's so much money on the table. Sobel's reported on this. Literally everybody's reported on this. and these are the numbers to back it up. It is not a hoop dream. This is not a ethereal best practice. You know, only the big guys are doing it. The money's there on the table for everybody. The barrier to entry is far lower. And I think the MSPs poised to do this are going to be the ones that are actually surviving through the oncoming recession. And I don't think there's any sign of stopping this. Cloud is just going to continue growing and growing. It's that behemoth you said, right?
So what you're saying, though, is this is what I think I hear you saying, is that this is a baseline of things moving forward. And these are the three major players that are going to be establishing that baseline. And correct me if I'm wrong, these numbers are growing. The overall cloud infrastructure that's being consumed or being provided by these three behemoth monsters, it's not like they're slowing down or they're cannibalizing each other's business. They're all growing as a whole. Is that correct?
Isn't that weird though, right? Like the fact that they're all growing, you know, and that just goes to show there's that much market share available for absolutely everybody. One of the things I did notice is on the report E2E did in 2020, they listed the big four. Now there is a fourth. Alibaba is an enormous cloud provider. It's not taken advantage of stateside, you know, because of China and everything else. So in North America, you think AWS, Google, and Microsoft. Alibaba is not far behind. It's just not, you know, on the global perspective, it's just in the US, it's not a common player. But I think you're exactly right. These guys just keep growing and growing, and, you know, there's no signs of stopping. Speaking of stopping, though, Tony, ransomware is done. We don't have to worry about it ever again.
In a rare case where a business shutting down is good, this is one. As noted in bleepingcomputer.com, AstroLocker ransomware shuts down and releases their decryptor keys. They're shutting down the operations and plan to switch everything to cryptojacking. We'll talk about that in a moment. They submitted a large zip archive with the AstroLocker decryptors in a malware analysis program platform called VirusTotal malware. They did not reveal the reason behind the AstroLocker shutdown. However, the developers did say, quote, "It was fun, and fun things always come to an end. I'm closing operations, and I'm going to cryptojacking." AstroLocker's operations would directly deploy payloads from email attachments using malicious Microsoft Word documents hiding the OLE object with a ransomware payload. Before encrypting files on the now compromised device, the ransomware will check to see if it's running in a virtual environment. It would kill the process, stop the backup. From that point forward, it would continue with all of the AV hindering services and the encryption process. Ray, there's so many things that are terrifying about their operation. We've been watching this. We've been reporting on this on the MSP Dispatch for so long, and it's only been getting worse. My question to you is this a sign that things are actually getting better? Are the ransomware groups moving away from ransomware to other low-hanging fruit, cryptojacking? Give me your thoughts on this. Let's unpack this together.
Nope. I mean, you know, I'd love to say it's getting better. It's getting worse. I will say I'm very happy that it was an uneventful weekend, that, you know, we all know what happened a year ago. You know, and that most of the security people I know were on high alert, right? We've been saying we expect stuff to happen over the weekend, especially over a long holiday weekend. So it was nice that nothing happened. Do I think it's getting better? Do I think it's getting easier? No, absolutely not. I do not. As long as we keep hearing articles where, you know, the issue could have been mitigated by applying MFA, as long as I keep hearing articles where people are, you know, reusing passwords or putting their credit card number online because they saw a warning pop up on a website. No, I don't think it's going to get any easier, because all these vectors of attack have proven themselves to be profitable. You know, we see it's a $1 billion industry. We talk about, you know, the cloud and the billions of dollars in the cloud and software and everything else, but ransomware is also a $1 billion industry. So I don't see any signs of letting up. While our methods of attacking it, stopping it, preventing it are getting better, their methods of applying it, distributing it, and encrypting us are also getting better. So no, I wish I could say things were letting up, but I just don't feel it. Tony, what's your take on this?
I wonder, are we going to miss this? I have prescription grade abandonment issues, and if for some reason they leave the ransomware genre is no longer that, what are we going to report on, Ray? What are we going to report on? It's just a constant in our life at this point. And I would like to remind everyone that the initial comment that I made about them moving to cryptojacking, target cryptojacking is where they take over a device to mine cryptocurrency, and that device is not their device. That's your device. That in itself is terrifying, because at some point, at some level, they have root level access that they're consuming processing. They're consuming power. You're paying for this power. They're consuming the pipe that this is traversing over. And of course, they're the ones that are benefiting from this, from a cryptocurrency manufactured on your resources. So there's a whole new genre that's opening up, because again, they're going to have root access at some point in their ability to do this. So abandoning or moving away from the ransomware side of things to a crypto mining operations, there's so many things that I have questions about. I'm assuming at this point that there's going to continue to be an evolution, and they find additional loopholes in ways to exploit, let's say, monetary value out of resources that are not owned, not their own. But my biggest question is, out of all the loopholes that are out there, Ray, have you identified or heard about any other loopholes that are being exploited? Because it doesn't just end with the ransomware groups.
Speaking of loopholes, as reported by John Bodkin of Ars Technica, as of 6:30, all providers, including these small ones, must use Stir, Shaken, Caller ID authentication. Large providers were previously required to implement this in March of 2021. Previously, an extension was provided by the FCC to providers with less than 100,000 lines until March of 2023. However, in December, the FCC voted to move the deadline up to June 30th, 2022, this past week. Tony, we've been preparing for this for over 2 years, so obviously you know what Stir Shaken is, right?
Nope. What is? I didn't know how to respond to that. Your nope caught me earlier. What is? Is that a drink? Is that a drink?
Nope. And again, for full transparency, I'm the owner of a VoIP company that caters to MSPs. So this affects me. We were previously given that. So this affects me directly. We were previously given that allowance until March of next year. And then the FCC moved it up at the last minute. Stir Shaken, the idea behind it is that calls are given a certificate by the sending party authenticating as to, or attesting to, the official word is attesting to, what the ownership or reliability of the person sending the call. Now, in the context of this, it means that the sender is saying, I either attest A, I have full accountability, and I have full knowledge that the person sending this call is an owner of this phone number. B, I have a considerable amount of reliability that the number is valid and the call is valid to not be a spam call. Or C, I have no idea. And then what happens on the receiving side, because telco is a giant cluster bomb, the receiving side takes that A, B, or C, and they do with it what they want. If they want to set mark all, now, best practices, mark all calls C as potential spam, mark B as maybe, and mark A as just mark it as a valid call. But because it's up to the receiving party, it's a little bit like that yellow light. There are certain people that see a yellow light and they slow down. There are certain people that see yellow light and they speed up. And because it's up to the receiving party and there's no direction from the FCC saying what you have to do, this continues to be a problem. I can tell you, as a voice provider for the last this past year, obviously I've been a voice provider a lot longer than that, but as a voice provider over this past year, numbers have been marked as spam that should not have been marked as spam, and there's been no end to this. The reason we're reporting on this, this is not a telco dispatch, this is MSP dispatch, is because telco is a common avenue of revenue for MSPs. And MSPs are now having to deal with this because many of them are using out-of-country providers, Canadian providers, and or European providers that may not be set up for this and have no intention of being set up for this. So it affects them. So does that make it a little more clear, Tony? Is that more understandable?
Nope.
Yeah.
here's what I hear. I hear there is a self-evaluation of something that's distributed to somebody that doesn't have to adhere to the evaluation at all, but they should, but they don't have to. And there's no accountability for that. And it reminds me of the old days, as in yesteryear, as in today, where your MX records that dictate the authoritative IP address or location of your email server has a TTL, a time to live, and an MX record weight. And you could have different MX records with different weights. The lower the weight, the more priority. Then ironically, a zero, being the lowest weight, would be treated as a null factor by some email servers. And the biggest real plunge into this is that the email server that received it didn't have to address, didn't have to respect those weights at all. So somebody that had a backup email server with an MX record of 10,000 could be receiving all of the email, or let's say 1/4 of the email if you have 4 MX records. The point, it just caused anarchy. And so what happened is people didn't start using the MX records correctly at all at that point, which defeated the very purpose they were originally given. And I think I'm seeing the exact same thing happen in the telco space now with this. And watching it unfold is such a shame, because we all have a problem with spam callers. All of us do. And if that authoritative insight isn't provided by the FCC, I don't think that's going to go anywhere. Do you see a resolution at the end of the day, Ray? What's your end result that you recommend?
No, and unfortunately, this is the problem is this is a, you know, this is, you're exactly on the money. This is just like SPF, DKIM, SPF lightning, right? You're not supposed to have supposed to have more than 10 records, DNS lookups in SPF. It's no different than certificate revocation, SSL certificate revocation. Not all browsers check for it. We don't have a solid process that across the board everybody follows. So yay government, yay FCC. Thanks for making it a little more complicated for everybody involved. You know, if you're an MSP and you're selling VoIP, and we want to hear how it's affecting you. Are your providers giving you guidance on this? Are they helping you out? And I promise we will not use it as a source to market to you. That's not how we fly. But it had to be said. Hit us up at news@mspmedia.tv or shoot us in the comments below. We do have some notable mentions here. As reported by Ron Amadeo of Ars Technica, Google is taking a page from Apple's repair kit program and improving on it. In a joint effort with iFixit, Google's program announced in April is now live. iFixit is offering various parts for the Pixel platform, including screens, batteries, rear camera assemblies, and many small parts. iFixit still adding parts for the Pixel 2, and later, starting with the Pixel 6, they have committed to have every part available. Considering comparing this to the Apple program, where you have to put a credit card on file and they ship you a box that has to be returned within 2 weeks. If not, they charge your card over $1,200, and it's 2 cases. I think this is a welcome change. Tony, we have some community feedback on our last episode.
We love feedback.
Joe Basil, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing it, said Kaseya had 50 customers out of 30,000 who were actually affected and 100,000 recovered, and the hacker was caught. Did you research the event at all? The advice was solid, but the boogeyman you picked doesn't line up to reality. So, you know, completely respect your opinion, and some people may not have seen it as a big deal. I can say it did not only affect 50 customers. Kaseya shut down the platform for more than 24 hours, where all cloud users in North America were stopped. They could not use the BMS. So, or I'm sorry, they could not use VSA. So that is far beyond just the 50. That the 50 were compromised, yes, absolutely. That every Kaseya VSA user was shut down is absolutely true for over 24 hours. That every Kaseya user was concerned about their platform and what was to be expected is absolutely true. That every Kaseya user, and so much so that Fred Vakola put out multiple videos on this, put out multiple announcements. They were still speaking on it months and months later. To say that only 50 people were affected, maybe 50 people were compromised, that's absolutely true. But affected goes far beyond this. I can tell you the conversations that were had with ConnectWise users, with Enable users or Ncentral users, with NinjaOne users. This was not just Kaseya, and that's why we reported on it. This is not the boogeyman that affected just the Kaseya people. The greater takeaway, and this was why I was being very careful not to beat up on Kaseya. This is not because of Kaseya. Yes, there were patches that were not addressed. Yes, in hindsight, everything can be done better. But I want to be very clear. It opened the conversation for supply chain attacks, specifically for MSPs, and the consideration we have to have for those things. And that conversation is still happening today. It is still, when we're talking about software bill of materials, when we're talking about underlying components and frameworks, those conversations are still happening. And I see them every single day, even a year later. And they may not be saying Kaseya in the conversation, but I guarantee you in the back of their minds, it's absolutely one of the prompters. Tony, you know, am I missing the mark here? Am I, you know, what's your takeaway on this?
No, you hit it on the head, which was, you know, downstream. And what happened in this is the first really prominent attack that happened upstream in our specific community that propagated to not just the resellers, but their customers as well. And although it was a small slice, it wasn't the cloud offering. It had a drastic impact on how we are thinking about the hacks and how they're being done. They're no longer the last mile hacks, the independent hacks. They're now moving upstream, and they're not moving upstream to just the reseller. They're moving to the manufacturer that the resellers consume, which begs the question, what is the next step after that? Is it further upstream? And that's why the Java hack, and I can't remember the name for the life of me, that came out, the library hack.
How about Log4j?
Log4j freaked everyone out because it was so far upstream that it had an impact that extended well beyond our comprehension. And I think, Ray, as I mentioned before, this was the first real prominent attack that we all felt at home. So I agree that there are speculation on how many people were hacked, how many people were affected, et cetera, et cetera. I think it was handled exceptionally well from Vakola and the Kaseya group. I think the MSPs did everything they could, but it was devastating. And I think it opened up the conversation, what is going to happen if they keep moving upstream? And I think that was the first prominent attack that we really talked about.
Thank you for the feedback. You know, if you have any other feedback, hit us up in the comments. We love this conversation. We want to get engaged with you. Hit us up, news@mspmedia.tv, or just keep hitting us in the comments. And we'd love to see the feedback. We will be setting up a phone number shortly for you to leave voicemails or send us videos. And we can cover that as well. But for now, we have some cool stuff coming up this week. Tony, what do we got going on?
We got some really cool upcoming events happening. On the 7th, we have the Partner First, Protecting the SMB Community, Contemporary Lessons from the Field. On the 8th, we have the MSP Dispatch Weekly Wrap-Up presented by this particular awesome group. On the 12th, we have the MSP Dispatch again, presented by this particular awesome group. And don't forget, the MSP Media Network is always bringing the best that we can. And finally, on the 14th, the Tech Bar Podcast, episode number 39, with Will Young and of Baring McKinley.
That will be fun. Will's a good guy. I've got to hang out with him a couple times at different events, so it's always fun. And that's it for this July 5th episode of MSP Dispatch. Tony, thank you so much for your insights, commentary, your notes. I appreciate you, dude.
I appreciate you, man. And happy birthday to America. What a great new birthday. This is going to be a new year. This is going to be new, cool stuff happening. And I'm glad that we all have our fingers and toes.
10 fingers, 10 toes. And until next time, take care, everybody.
See y'all.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.